Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
The program that always starts the same way for you. Can you remember? Of course you can. What's the question we always ask? Are you financially fit? That's the important part of this show. That's really what we aim for. It is to make sure that you are financially fit in every possible way. And to do that, you have to be an educated consumer. And to be more specific, you have to be making more than you spend. Are you making more than you spend? Or are you spending more than you make? And you know the consequences of that. But number one, you have to make more than you spend. Number two, do you have 6 months of survival or emergency savings to meet all unexpected and expected expenses? Now, what's the difference? You can add up what you're spending on a monthly basis. And those are survival savings. And you have to have 6 months of that saved, put away, so that if something does happen, you can pay those bills for 6 months. You know you can. Now, that's what you expect. I always also say that I want you to have and ask you to have 6 months of emergency money or 3 months or something that keeps you from digging into your survival funding. And put that away as well, because you never know what's going to happen. In the twinkling of an eye, you can go from someone who can help to someone who needs help. And you ought to be able to help yourself, okay? And finally, are you saving at least 5% of your income on a monthly basis? Of everything you make, save 5%. Put that away. Now, if you're doing that, then, folks, you can start really saying to yourself, okay, I'm financially fit. Yeah, there's a lot of other things you can do and you should be doing, investing in this. But these are survival emergency survival tactics that are going to save you, and you'll thank me, and you'll say, well, I'm sure glad I did that, and he's absolutely right. Today we have two very special guests on the program. The first is Carol Candu Panada. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She is a counsel for the FTC, the Division of Consumer and Business Education. A counsel means a lawyer. A legal eagle, someone who understands how these things work. And my second guest today will be from the insurance agency. Are you thinking about becoming an Uber or whatever they call it, or Lyft driver? Well, if you are, you ought to know the insurance rules, because you could get into big trouble if you don't. But you know what surprises me, folks, is how we have agencies in place that we don't even begin to think about using. And the FTC is one of those. And if you're saying, what is the FTC? You know, I'm not angry at you about that, but I am surprised, and I want you to know. The Federal Trade Commission. And then you're saying, well, what does that do, and why should I know about that? We'll ask Carol to explain that. But what we're really going to be talking about today with her is identity theft. And there again, you may say, well, what do you mean? Let's find out from the lady who knows. As I say, she's counsel at the FTC's Division of Consumer and Business Education, where she leads teams to create free publications, sites, videos, and social media tips, and all to help you avoid fraud and to manage your money. When somebody rips you off and you say, I don't know what to do about it, one of the first places you should think about is the FTC. Carol, welcome back to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And thank you for being there. And, you know, I am surprised and somewhat angry at my audience when they say to me, I didn't know what the FTC is and I don't know what they do. Let's start right there, first of all. The FTC is a people institution.
That's right. The FTC is a consumer protection agency. We're a law enforcement agency. We bring cases against scammers and fraud artists, and even against some legitimate companies that maybe push the bounds of their advertising a little bit too far.
And it's simple as that, folks. And if I call you, or I write to you, or I go to the website, how much is it going to cost me to get you engaged to look at what I'm concerned about?
Well, it's not going to cost you anything to report fraud to FTC. You go to ftc.gov/complaint, and you can file your complaint as easy as that. If you go onto our website, consumer.ftc.gov, there's even a phone number there if you wanted to call and report your complaint that way. You talk to a trained counselor. It's not a computerized menu, and that counselor will walk you through the questions that they need to get to file your complaint. Now, we don't intervene individually, so it's not like we're going to be able to mediate a dispute. But the reason it's helpful when you file a complaint is that sometimes what seems just like an oddball one-off email or, a phone call that was just kind of a mistake. Once we see that there's lots of them and you can sort of identify whether something is a new fraud or an evolving fraud, it helps us determine where fraud is going in the marketplace, and it helps us determine where our education efforts need to go and what kind of cases we need to investigate.
And folks, simply put, you don't have to determine how serious it is. If it's serious to you, if you care about it, if you think somebody has ripped you off, if you think something's happening that shouldn't be happening, contact. They'll make that decision. But let them know what's on your mind. Now, before we take a break, let's go to our subject, identity theft. What is identity theft, Carol?
Identity theft is when someone misuses another person's information fraudulently. So they're going to get that your information and either get some kind of a benefit or a good or a service from it, or maybe even try to file your tax return.
All right, folks, when we come back, we're talking with Carol Kandu-Pamata. When we come back, we're going to explain that. We're going to go through some things that you can and should do to make sure that you can at least protect yourself. Identity theft, it is ugly, and it can hurt you in ways you can't even think about. We'll be right back. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network.
Want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about, or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Carol Kandu-Pamata. She is with the FTC. Did I say it right, Al? Did I get it right that time? Pineda. And I said, cheapest, Carol, I'm sorry. You know, it's just, it's age. It's just a condition of age, Carol, that's all.
It's no problem. We still love you, Paul.
Thank you very much. What we really don't love, are those who would rip us off by stealing our identity. And it really is a big problem. I mean, there's no question about it. It happens hundreds of thousands of times all across the country. But if I do suspect identity theft, in whatever form it might be, later missing bills, items on my credit report that I don't think belong to me, unexplained calls from debt collectors, what's the first thing I should do, Carol?
Okay, the first thing is you want to contact the businesses for those accounts that you think were affected, right? So if it's a credit card issue, you want to contact that credit card company. You want to close the accounts or freeze them and then reset your password and your PINs. Then you want to put a fraud alert on your credit report. So to do that, you go to the three credit reporting companies. And if you go onto our website, identitytheft.gov, it'll give you all the information for that step, the names of the companies, their telephone numbers, their websites. All you have to do is call one. The one you call is obligated to call the other two. So you'll get a fraud alert put on all three of your big three credit reports. And then you want to order copies of them so that you can check to see what else might be on there that you missed or that you don't know about that's a cause of that identity theft. Mm-hmm. And then you want to report the identity theft to FTC at identitytheft.gov. The reason that's important is that your report, when you print it out, becomes your identity theft affidavit. And without that affidavit, there are certain rights as an identity theft victim that you can't exercise. So once you have that paper in your hand, it makes it much easier to recover and to start to get things going back in your favor again.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, Mrs. Pineda. That sounds like an awfully lot of stuff to do. I mean, come on, I've got to do all of that. I mean, can I just call somebody and say, I think I've been ripped off?
Well, by contacting the businesses, that's probably the closest as you're going to get to that that easy a step. recovery from identity theft does take a little bit of time, and it takes some work. That's why identitytheft.gov has tried to put as many helpful tools as possible in one place. So if you file the complaint and you get that affidavit, then you can go back to that credit reporting company. If they need proof that you were the victim, you've got the proof that you're the victim. If you bring it to the credit reporting company, you can get charges permanently removed from your credit report. Sometimes you get them removed, and without the proof that you're the victim, they just keep coming back and coming back. So you want to be able to go back to them and prove that it's taken off. There's really no easy way, but if you go to identitytheft.gov, they'll set up for you a recovery plan so that you get a checklist with the specific steps that you need to take. Mm-hmm. And if you create the account, you can go back in and check them off as you do them.
Okay. It just makes perfect sense, folks. Look, we're talking about you protecting your identity. We're talking about you protecting the money in your accounts. We're talking about protecting your email and all the other things that you may use electronically or otherwise. And if you don't make enough noise about it and go through the process, it's likely to happen to you again. And that's an important point. Once I've done this, can I get ripped off again?
Sure, sure. And that's why it's important to create that paper trail, to save copies of everything that you've got in your credit reports. If you find a problem in your credit report, you want to mark it up, make a copy, send it back to the credit reporting company with a letter explaining what the problem is. At identitytheft.gov, you can get a personalized letter, you can get samples, and it'll automatically populate with your information. You print it out, put it together with your credit report, send it out, keep copies of everything, because a year from now, it might come back again, and you want to be able to show that you're the victim.
And how widespread is this, Carol? Let's talk about that for my people. I've never been ripped off. I'm not sure they know or not. But this is widespread, isn't it?
It is pretty widespread. Every year, FTC gets about 500,000 complaints about identity theft in our complaint system. The Department of Justice estimates the number of identity theft victims to be about 17 million people in the United States.
17 million people it could happen to them. And so and you could be one of the 17 million out there. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about some other things you should know. You get the notice, and where should you go to report? All of that information is right here for you. So stick around. Carol will be right back with more. You're listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. You're listening to Home and Finance Radio on the Radio America Network. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you so much for joining us. Home and Family Finance is designed to make you a more educated and effective consumer, to making all of us, if you will, financially fit. That's what it's all about, folks. And my guest today, Carol Condo Pineda, is here to explain what you can do when it comes to identity theft that affects all of us. But before we get to that, let me get to this. You're listening to the radio program thanks to the Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions that believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves and their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, to support, and to encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves, set a goal, make a plan, save automatically, and go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And it's always important whether you are in or not in the military, whatever you're doing, wherever you're doing, remember that 5% rule that we talk about? Save 5% of your income every day, every way, every place. And don't let 1 week go by that you're not putting away 5%. You'll be surprised how good you feel and how well it makes you feel and how much you can save in a very short period of time. And all of a sudden, you've got that particular weapon in your arsenal. And that weapon is that you've got a financial power. And financial power makes you feel it makes your rest easy. So by all means, do that. You'd rest easy, too, if you understand the importance of identity theft, how pervasive it is, how anybody can be hit by this. And there are all kinds of different ways that you can hit that. No one knows that any more than Carol Kondo Pineda. Carol, talk to me, if you would, about data breaches. I mean, what are we talking about here?
We've all seen the stories in the news that all different kinds of organizations, computer files get hacked and somebody steals information out of them. That's what a data breach is, when your information is compromised in that way. And the effects of it and what you need to do really depend on what information was compromised. So let's take the worst case scenario. Let's say it was your Social Security number. Then if you get that letter and it says your information was compromised, and chances are it was your Social Security number, if it was employment information or somebody where you would have given your Social Security number to them, then if they offer free credit monitoring, take it, right? Because mm-hmm. that's probably a good thing to do, and it'll take some of the burden off of you. But then you should go ahead and order your free credit report from annualcreditreport.com. That's the only place where you can get that free annual credit report, annualcreditreport.com. You might want to think about getting a credit freeze.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at your credit report, see if there's any damage, see what else is going on. It depends on what your personal tolerance for risk is. Some people might want to try a fraud alert. Some people might be fine just writing it out and checking their credit report regularly and seeing what they see. Some people might feel like they want to lock their credit down right away and get that freeze. And you do that mm-hmm. through the credit reporting companies. And then one bit of advice that seems a little bit odd, but it's really important. You want to try to file your taxes as early as you possibly can, because then that prevents scammers from getting in ahead of you and trying to use your Social Security number to file using your Social Security number and getting your refund back.
And what about the Social Security number? If I've been breached and my Social Security number is out there, I've had it for years, do I need to change it or can I change it?
You know, I think in general, it's a very difficult proposition to change your Social Security number. And then my understanding of what Social Security's position on this is that even if you change your Social Security number, it's still out there. It doesn't necessarily stop the damage from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And your new Social Security number could be compromised as well. So you're better off just trying to straighten out the problem and protect that number as much as you can.
And let's talk about the importance very quickly here. You've got to do something. You can't just not do anything and expect that things are, you have to, and it's an ongoing process, right?
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. What we like to tell people is you want to make that monitoring a habit, right? You want to make it as easy and as regular as brushing your teeth or looking two ways before you cross the street. You know, at first it's a little burdensome because you've got to get used to doing what you're doing.
Right.
But to be financially healthy, you should be aware of every credit card account that you have, every other account, and you should know what you owe on them. Then you'll be able to spot a problem if it comes up.
Take care of your business, folks. That's what Carol is talking about. Carol, thanks so much for joining us here. I know we'll be talking later in the year, and I look forward to having you back on the program.
Terrific. Thank you.
The FTC, folks, is there for you. The Federal Trade Commission. Use it. Fine folks like Carol are there for your to help you. When we come back, Laura Adams from Insurance Quotes.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
Okay, so what else are you going to do for the rest of your life? You are retired, or you're starting out, or you've got time, or you need to make more money. Hey, all of us find ourselves having to face some decisions about, you know, what we're going to do. Maybe it's just because you just have to keep busy. And a lot of folks, and I don't know whether my next guest knows the numbers or not, but I can tell you this. It's in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people have decided that they're going to be a Uber or Lyft driver. That is, you know, that's what we're shared road driving, or whatever they call this business. They decide that's what they're going to do. And so they jump into it, and they don't sometimes think through every aspect of it. For instance, if you decide you're going to be a driver, a shared driver, what's the possibilities that you can use your current insurance to do that? Mm-hmm. Hadn't thought about it. You just kind of think your insurance company is going to cover you while you drive other people all over town. Well, guess what, folks? There's more to it than that, and you need to know about that. And so we've asked Lori, she's been on the show before. Laura Adams is the lady when it comes to insurance. She's an analyst and an expert. She works with insurance quotes. She's also host of the top-rated weekly Money Girl podcast. She is the author of multiple books, including Money Girl's Smart Moves to Grow Rich, which won the 2011 Excellence in Financial Literacy Education. So she's somebody right down her alley because she's about education. And in a all of us have to have some kind of insurance, or generally we do. And in this case, if you decide that you're going to jump out there and be one of those drivers, Laura Adams, they need to know some things about that, right?
They do indeed. So thanks so much for having me on to talk about this. And you're right, more and more people are jumping on the ride-sharing bandwagon because it is a pretty convenient way to make money, and it's flexible. You can do it part-time or full-time, and it's becoming available in more and more cities. I think it's in over 100 big cities right now, and even smaller cities are accepting these drivers. So what we need to know, I think the big takeaway here, is that you're probably going to need some additional or some different auto insurance than you have for your personal use of the car.
Uh-huh.
Starting, yeah, that's the trick here. And a lot of people just don't think about that because they think, oh, well, I've already got insurance. I'm covered. But what happens is when you start taking money, when you accept a payment to transport people from point A to point B, all of a sudden you are not in a personal situation. You're in a commercial situation.
Well,
that calls for different coverage.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry, but I'm driving my car, that I have insurance on. The insurance company has insured me and my car. How dare they not extend this if I put somebody in the back seat of my car to make a dollar or two? Come on, Laura. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it really should be that big of a deal. But from an insurance company's perspective, it's a really big deal because the difference is you become a higher risk to them driving for business versus for personal use. So as you become a different type of risk to them, they want to make sure that you're going to be covered. So, you know, there are a couple of ways that you can handle it. And some of these companies, like Uber, for instance, do your coverage. So they offer some type of ride coverage. But what you need to know is that the coverage may have some big-time gaps. So it may have a gap in coverage. For instance, let's say you are sitting there and you've opened up your app. You've opened up the Uber app.
Right.
But you haven't yet taken a passenger. So you haven't yet formally begun that relationship. So your app is open, but you're not there yet. You haven't accepted a passenger.
Okay.
So in that case, your Uber insurance may not cover you. And this is going to vary depending on the state, also where you're driving. Every state has different regulations, which make this topic even more confusing. There may be gaps that just don't cover it.
Don't cover it. Let me stop a minute because the question I'm going to ask you is when I go back to driving my car for myself, am I covered or do I have to do something? Listen, there's so much to know about this, folks, so don't just jump in your car and drive away. Laura Adams is my guest. When we come back, we'll find out from her how this really works and how you can best protect yourself. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Laura Adams, senior insurance analyst and author with Insurance Quote. She's written several books, and she is the expert, if you will, folks, when it comes to insurance needs. Now, most of us do carry personal auto insurance policies, but does it cover me if I decide I'm going to be involved in a driver rideshare program? That's what we're asking Laura to explain. And so, Laura, let's continue on that. Let's assume that I now understand that that my personal insurance company is not going to cover me when I'm ride-sharing. But I'm using the same car when I don't ride-share. So do I have two different policies working?
Yes. So there are two options. You can, in a lot of cases, get what's called an endorsement or a rider. So this would be a ride-sharing rider or a ride-sharing endorsement to your personal policy. So that would give you that extra coverage you need when you're on the job. Or you can keep your personal policy and have a separate auto commercial policy. You're probably going to want to shop what's available in your state. Not all insurance companies are offering these riders or endorsements. Some are. Some are really getting pretty progressive and pretty up to date with what's going on in the ride sharing community. So they are making these additional policies pretty easy to get.
I got you.
But if you're with a company that doesn't have that, you may have to get a separate commercial auto insurance policy.
Okay.
And either way, you're going to be protected.
And either way, you're also going to have to pay more for that endorsement or for that second policy.
You are. You know, you're going to pay more to have that extra protection. But it is so worth it because, as we've said, most personal policies are going to exclude coverage. So if you get into an accident while you've got passengers, maybe you have passengers that are injured, or even your car is damaged while you're on the job, it's just not going to be covered. So that's a huge financial risk to take. So this additional expense is, just think about it as part of the cost of doing business as a ride-sharing driver. You really need to have it.
And if I'm using my personal auto insurance policy and I don't notify my insurance company of what I'm doing, that I'm involved in a rideshare program, what can they do to me?
Yeah, well, they're certainly not going to cover your claim, number one. And number two, you run the risk that they could drop you altogether. They could say, this is just a risky policyholder. They're doing things that are, not in our contract. And they could really just decide to drop you altogether. More likely, though, you would simply just get a claim denied. So if you have damage or if a passenger is injured and you go to make a claim, you're going to get the sorry Charlie response and say, they're going to say this is a commercial situation. It's just not covered under your personal policy.
And, of course, I'm the same good driver that I have been with this insurance company. But what they really are charging me for, I guess, is that I'm driving more. I'm on the road more. What does the charge really kind of cover? Or why is the endorsement necessary?
Yeah, so this differentiation does come from the fact that you are driving more miles in a business scenario. You also could be driving in riskier situations. You could be driving, let's say, in an urban area, or you could be driving late at night. Those are situations where statistically the insurance companies know you're more likely to get into an accident. So all of those kind of play together to make you a different profile of driver. And so because now you're seen as a higher risk to them, they want to classify you differently. And that's why a business activity is just not going to be covered under a commercial, or rather under a personal policy. And this is also the situation we see with the Airbnb policies or the Airbnb relationships that are becoming so common, where people are renting out their homes to visitors. Same kind of situation. If you've got a guest in your home and you're taking money, you need to have commercial insurance for that type of relationship in your home as well. Very similar type of scenario.
Absolutely, it is. And that's interesting that you point that out, because if you're planning on doing any of this, Laura, you should really be very careful and check out from experts, those who are doing these things, whether it's driving or sharing, and find out what you really do need to make sure that you're completely protected, right?
That's it. So be open, be transparent with your insurance company or your agent or anybody that you may go to for a quote, and be upfront with them. Say, hey, I'm looking at driving on a part-time basis. It may work out, it may not, or I'm interested in having an Airbnb guest in my home for a couple weeks a year. Be realistic about what you're doing. Don't try to hide it, because it really can come back to hurt you, not only in a claim that could be denied, but getting your insurance dropped altogether. other. So honesty is the best policy, and this is why we have insurance, right, mm-hmm. is to make sure that we're covered no matter what happens. So if you're hiding the types of activities that you do, you really run the risk that you're not going to get the coverage that you've been paying for all along. So don't fool yourself into thinking that it's going to be
right.
worth it to hide that information.
That's such a great point. That's such a great point, folks. Look, don't hurt yourself. You're hiding now, and all of a sudden something happens, you stumble, and boy, you're really in big trouble. Now, because this Airbnb and because of ride sharing is becoming such a big thing, I assume that insurance companies are looking at this to say, okay, this is something that we want to cover. So I guess the question is, are some insurance companies doing a better job of offering you a better premium, a better coverage than others?
There are, you know, certainly there are more and more companies getting into this all the time. So more and more offering the ride sharing endorsements or even what are called hybrid policies. This is kind of the newest, biggest thing that's coming in the marketplace is a hybrid policy where it's both personal auto coverage and commercial auto coverage all wrapped up into one policy.
Wow. Okay.
So that, let's say you just decide to do a little bit of ride sharing and you kind of just want to have the option to do both. Those are also becoming popular. So I would say, look to the company that you're currently with, get a quote, ask them if they offer these coverages. But you know what? If they don't be afraid to shop around. You can use a site like insurancequotes.com to find out what are different companies out there who can provide you the coverage that you need.
Well, it certainly makes sense. And I know you pointed out, too, that what prompted my question was your comment to me earlier, or at least in written form, that State Farm and Farmers, they do offer ride-sharing endorsements. So they've already kind of reached out there and said, look, let's be prepared for those who come and ask for this kind of coverage.
Yes, they're certainly leading the pack. I'd say USAA is another company that's also been very kind of, leading in the new types of relationships that are coming up with auto insurance. So those are great places to start. And of course, shopping online is easy, convenient. Insurancequotes.com gives quotes 24/7. And you're going to get quotes from multiple companies depending on the type of policy that you're looking for and also what's available where you live. So I will say that there are a few companies available that are doing this, but they may not be available in every state. They may not be available in the city where you live. Mm-hmm. So you really need to do your homework and find out what are the best options for you.
And that's so important, what you just said. Do your homework. Check it out. Make sure it works for you. Don't just jump in there thinking, okay, I can make some money, and not look at the downsides of this.
That's it. So if you're making money, terrific. But what happens if you get into an accident and now all of a sudden you've got to pay out of pocket to repair, damage to your vehicle that happened while you were on the job? I mean, that can wipe out all of the profit that you made.
Okay. We're talking with Laura Adams. She is a senior insurance analyst and author of several books, folks. And when we come back, we're going to ask her about the laws that vary in each state. You should know where you are and what the laws are there. And it may even mean that you might want to move to another state because the laws are better. We'll find out from Laura if that's the case. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network. Listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, on the Radio America Network. My guest, Laura Adams, senior insurance analyst with Insurance Quotes. She's also the author of several books is a person that knows. Look, I got to tell you, Laura, I was intrigued by this idea. I've got time. I mean, I think I do. A time enough to say, okay, I'm going to join the process. I'm going to join in and maybe be a driver and do some ride sharing. I've even thought about the Air A and B, Air whatever it's called, in terms of we have a huge house and the kids are all gone. But again, I never thought about the insurance company until I thought about it in terms of what I would need to do. And I also wonder about whether I was in a state that was most most compromising or easier or better. Laws do vary from state to state, don't they?
They really do, and that's a big part of insurance, is understanding that where you live does play a big role in what's available to you and also the prices that you have to pay. So all states require that you have some amount of liability coverage. And I will point out that the liability coverage is in many states, it's really low. The minimums can be just, you know, kind of surprisingly low.
So
I would say don't just go with that. You know, that's one kind of tip. Look at what you really need and think about increasing those limits. If you're in a state like Florida, for instance, has very low liability limits, you probably need more.
Okay.
And then in other states, there are optional coverages like collision and comprehensive. Those are optional, but the deal is you probably need them because they're going to pay for repairs.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, if you're looking at Lyft, you're looking at Uber, the commercial policies or the riders that you might put on your personal policy to cover you, those are also going to vary. So the minimum amounts that you're going to need and what's available to you really are going to vary by the state where you are. So some states are a lot more progressive, like California is one of the states that is proactively doing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of drivers there. I'd say Colorado is another one that seems to have, made a lot of progress.
Right.
But if you're in a state that just doesn't seem to have a lot of big cities or a lot of drivers, you know, you're going to need to really perhaps do a little bit more homework and find out how to get around some of the limitations. You want to ask the ride-sharing company that you plan to work with what they offer, you know, and understand that that's probably not going to be your primary source of coverage. It might be a good thing to have as a backup.
Okay.
But you do need to have your own policy as well, because that ride-sharing policy is likely going to have some gaps in coverage.
And that's what
you need to understand what they're giving you versus what you could get on your own.
Okay. I wanted to ask because I would assume that they do have packages, these companies, that they offer to you. But what you're suggesting is take a good look at them to make sure that you're really covered the way you want to be.
Yeah. You can look at what they're offering, and then also speak to your current agent or your current company that you work with, or even a new company that you may be looking at getting a quote from. Let them know, hey, okay, here's what Uber or Lyft is telling me I'm getting from them. What am I missing? What are the gaps here that maybe I'm not thinking about? And let that professional insurance agent guide you and let them tell you, okay, this is good, but hey, I see where you're, you know, you're missing some, or you have some extra risk in this area. They can really help you fill in those gaps. So you really want to get advice and guidance, not only from the ride sharing company, but from the professional insurance agent to make sure that you are fully covered and there's never going to be a situation where you're at risk.
Well, good thought. Let me ask you about this too. You know, banks now, there are many banks out there, you know, they're not brick and mortar. I mean, they're online banks. Are there online insurance companies now?
Yes. You know, what's interesting is we have a lot of what we call aggregators. And so insurancequotes.com, our company is an aggregator. We are online, but we're sending you and matching you to a solid carrier. So that company, like State Farm, for instance, they may do business online, but they're also a brick and mortar insurance company. And so what we do is match you with the nation's top insurance carriers. We want to make sure that customers are getting quality coverage at the best price possible. And so what that means is we have a massive network of insurance companies that we match you with.
Okay.
And so it's going to vary depending on where you live.
How can we reach out to you? Time is up, and I want to get that in there. Can we call or reach out to your company?
Yes, the best way is just to visit insurancequotes.com.
Insurancequotes.com. Laura, you're always such a pleasure to talk to. Thank you for doing the show, and come back and see us again sometime, would you please?
It's been my pleasure. I'd love to talk to you again.
It's always a pleasure. Laura Adams is my guest, senior insurance analyst, and Insurance Quotes is where you want to go. We're out of time. Interesting stuff, huh? You never know. We'll be here same time, same place next week. Thank you, Al Peterson. Thank you, folks. Radio America, Home and Family Finance, what a great matchup. See you next week.